An erratic, autocratic, and vindictive leader in a time when death is all too present. As familiar as that sounds, it's part of Hilary Mantel's trio of books about Henry VIII's fixer, Thomas Cromwell. In with a review, here's Frank Sose reading from the first book, Wolf Hall.
So, now get up. Felled, dazed, silent, he has fallen, knocked full length on the cobbles of the yard. His head turned sideways, his eyes are turned toward the gate, as if someone might arrive to help him out. One blow, properly placed, could kill him now. Blood from the gash on his head, which was his father's first effort, is trickling across his face. Add to this, his left eye is blinded, but if he squints sideways with his right eye, he can see that the stitching of his father's boot is unraveling. The twine has sprung clear of the leather, and a hard knot in it has caught his eyebrow and opened another cut. So, now get up. Walter is roaring down at him, working out where to kick him next. He lifts his head an inch or two and moves forward on his belly, trying to do it without exposing his hands, which Walter enjoys stamping. What are you, an eel? His parent asks. He trots backward, gathers pace, and aims another kick. It knocks the last breath out of him. He thinks it may be his last. His forehead returned to the ground. He lies waiting for Walter to jump on him. The dog, Bella, is barking, shut away in a house. I'll miss my dog, he thinks. The yard smells of beer and blood. Someone is shouting down on the riverbank. Nothing hurts, or perhaps it's that everything hurts, because there is no separate pain that he can pick out. But the cold strikes him just in one place, just through his cheekbone as it rests on the cobbles.
Frank Sose reading from Wolf Hall, Hilary Mantel's first book in a trilogy of books about Thomas Cromwell.
Yes, an important figure in the reign of Henry VIII, very important. But when we meet him at the very beginning of Wolf Hall, he is probably a teenager. We think he was maybe born in 1485. And he's being badly beaten by his dad, who is a blacksmith and brewer and a child abuser. Cromwell runs away from home several times. The first time he runs away from home, he goes to London. And there he witnesses the public burning of a Lollard, which affects him greatly. He returns in his memory many times to that episode. And the adult Thomas Cromwell will witness a few public burnings himself. That would be during the reign of Henry VII and VIII and following. That would be the standard punishment for heretics. Ordinary people are simply hanged or beheaded. So for heretics, it's the worst punishment, and he's very aware of that. The politics of the reign of Henry VIII are everywhere enmeshed with the politics of the church. So that becomes pretty much inescapable for this man.
And a martyr from that period of time, and a figure in Robert Bolt's A Man for All Seasons, Thomas More. But I understand Thomas More doesn't come off as a paragon of virtue either.
Well, at some level, these men are political connivers and political survivors. And that matters because they are serving a king who is erratic, given to a lot of emotional outbursts, fickle, a very hard guy to work with and for. He succeeds his father, Henry VII, who was none of the above. Henry VII actually left his son a pretty stable kingdom, but the young Henry, something of a playboy, is very hard to handle. So yeah, Sir Thomas More in Wolf Hall, the principal concern is what to do about Thomas More, because the issue is, well, Catherine of Aragon has now pretty clear she's not going to provide a male heir. She has many children, many miscarriages, stillbirths. One child, Mary, will be the only child to live past the age of two. So we've got a woman who can't bear a child and a king with no male heir, and so Henry wants to move on.
How does Hilary Mantel handle this rich material?
Well, one answer is wonderfully well, I think, but she is interested not so much on Henry, but really on his fixer, the guy that in some important way he can't really do without. In Cromwell, you know, he's come up from nothing. Some of the nobles never cease enjoying throwing this in his face. You're a commoner. The very, very, very end of Cromwell's life, he gets to become Earl of Essex right before he's thrown in the Tower. So he's there to try to help solve the, you know, in volume one, Wolf Hall, solve the problem of how to get Henry's marriage with Catherine of Aragon annulled so we can move on to that queen who will be Anne Boleyn. This gets tricky. Cromwell has learned a lot from another Thomas, Thomas Wolsey, who is a cardinal, and of course when this story begins, he is a cardinal in the Catholic Church. But what they really want is for Henry to get his annulment, but also for the Pope to grant it and not have to be excommunicated and not have to break with the church. And Wolsey can't provide that, so Henry leaves the church and starts Church of England. And so that's a failure on Wolsey, and Wolsey will die on his way to court hearing where he's probably going to be charged with treason. That's, when you fail for Henry, that's very often how you're charged. And Cromwell, after knocking around as a mercenary on the continent, after crawling into an Italian's household, beaten up, broken, going to work in the kitchen, has now risen up, and because he's a smart guy as well as a tough guy, he's become Cardinal Wolsey's right-hand man, although he's not a cleric in any way.
Mm-hmm. So one of the challenges I would guess Mantell faces as having Thomas Cromwell as the main character is getting us to sympathize.
Yeah, I mean, it is, and I think that's one of the tough challenges. As you've noted, Robert, Thomas More doesn't come off looking so good in these volumes either. And here's the good side of Cromwell. Despite his horrific upbringing, he is, in the words of John McCain, a good family man. He is very devoted to his wife and his children. His wife and his two daughters die very quickly and very suddenly. When you read these novels, you're constantly aware of. People die quickly and unexpectedly, and so nothing's very certain. Cromwell's son does survive. He takes in a couple of urchins and brings them along, and some of these people do very well politically farther up the road and die wealthy as wealthy commoners. So in that sense, there's a very generous side to him, but he thinks much about his own preservation. And also his mentor, Cardinal Wolsey, made no bones about enriching himself as he enriched the kingdom. Cromwell does enrich himself, but he's much less given to, say, showy pomp, which is one of the things that gets his mentor in trouble. His boss, Henry, is kind of a spendthrift, and that's a problem. You're always having to help this guy find some more money. So that's a sticking point too. He's got a very difficult boss.
It's often observed, I think, that trilogies are tough, especially the final act. How does she sustain the narrative through three volumes?
That's a wonderful question, because one of the reasons I like these books is that they are written in a way unlike the way I write. I never know how a story is going to end when I begin. Mantell has certain marks she has to hit. Sir Thomas More will be executed. Anne Boleyn will be executed. Cromwell himself will be executed. And anybody who knows just a little bit about English history knows these marks are going to have to be hit. So getting Cromwell to these points and helping us understand how we get to each one is really what the books are built on. And I think the first one, Wolf Hall, and the second one, Bringing Up the Bodies, do this extremely well, because we see Cromwell first in conversation with Wolsey and then in conversation with Sir Thomas More, trying to work his way around to what we know is an inevitable conclusion. Thomas More is going to be beheaded. So how do you justify that if you're Cromwell, and how do you be a part of that? And the same is true with Anne Boleyn. He's going to let that happen. But by the time we get to the last one, it's the fattest of the three. And by now, Cromwell is very much a visibly powerful guy. And in this way, he's made many enemies. He's got enemies among the titled nobility who resent his power, and he's a commoner. He's got enemies among these people who would like the Catholic Church to return to England. And he's even got problems here with people who are eventually going to become Protestants. We'll remember that as a boy, he's seen the Lollard burn. And as an adult, he allows a guy who we would call him a early day Protestant. He calls him a gospeler, a guy named John Lambert, who actually has the temerity to challenge Henry to a theological debate. This is so unwise. I mean, you're debating the guy who, not only your debate opponent, but also the referee. And so at the end of this debate, Cromwell is asked if he has anything to say. And he, at this moment, he could say something that might protect Lambert at least a little bit from the worst of it. And he declines. This is the second public burning we witness in this novel. Very graphically, very well told, as I'm afraid the execution of Anne Boleyn is too. Grim stuff, but in this last Mirror in the Light volume, Hilary Mantel has a difficult task because there's so many events. The Cromwell that we've studied closely in Wolf Hall and Bringing Up the Bodies, the guy whose mental machinations we see, that much of Cromwell has been pushed behind just to get the events that happen accounted for, because we've got a pretty good real historic record of what this man did. And the accomplishment in the first book especially is to enter into this 500-year-old plus man's head and build what for me seems a very convincing psychology of a political operative that should look familiar to all of us right now.
Well, Frank, thank you so much for coming around and reviewing them.